We are a people drenched in sorrows. As this sermon is recorded today, Wednesday, June 3rd, we are a nation afflicted, caught somewhere between pandemic and pandemonium. So come with me for a moment aside, a moment apart, wherein we survey together the high ground, scour the background, and seek the common ground of our current condition, the condition our condition is in. First, the high ground. Former Secretary of Homeland Security Jay Johnson led us toward high ground this week. He had done so before, right here. Some of you will remember his voice in 2014 from this pulpit. Secretary Johnson preached from the Marsh pulpit on January 25th, 2014. Present with Johnson and the Dean of Marsh Chapel were Charlene Hunter-Galt, 24 BU medical students in their white coats, another physician who had been the doctor for Arthur Ashe, the then president of Planned Parenthood, Cecile Richards, about 300 guests, family, and friends. We were present to honor the life and faithfulness of Dr. Kenneth Edelin, a BU alumnus, renowned physician, and national civil rights leader. Marsh Chapel that day was full. At one point, we asked the congregation to recite together the 23rd Psalm. Family and friends in the first pew did so. Colleagues and physicians across the nave did so. Leaders of national organizations near and far did so. And in the balcony, 20 white-coated medical students together did so. At that point in the service, we stood silently together following the psalm to honor the life and faith of the deceased. That day I met a friend and the personal physician of Arthur Ashe, whose life, prowess, faithfulness, and service had always so inspired me. Read again this summer his autobiography, Days of Grace. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. In the collation following the service, some of us remembered Arthur Ashe. Arthur Ashe suffered a heart attack in 1979. He would later undergo surgery for quadruple bypass, but continued to suffer chest pain. This forced him to retire from tennis with a record of 818-260, including his 3 Grand Slams. He remains the only African-American male to have won any of these men's singles titles. Ashe would have to undergo a second bypass surgery in 1983. During this operation, he received a blood transfusion. The blood Ashe received was infected with human immunodeficiency virus, HIV. In 1988, this discovery was made. The condition was kept private until 1992, when Ashe announced to the world he had AIDS. When asked if having AIDS was the toughest challenge he had ever had to face, Ashe replied, "No, the hardest thing I've ever had to deal with was being a black man in this society, having to live as a minority in America. Even now, it feels like an extra weight tied around me." Also, in the collation following the service, Charlene Hunter-Galt introduced herself. You may remember her, as we did, from her many and fine contributions to the NewsHour with Jim Lehrer. She said, "I need to talk to you about the 23rd Psalm." I was so pleased to meet her, and then so worried that I had somehow offended her, that the collation time passed anxiously. It needn't have done. She wanted to recall a memory of her younger self at age 18. The first African-American to integrate the University of Georgia, the daughter of a Baptist minister, alone in a big place, a strange place, a new place. Walking home the third night, there were taunts and threats. The university that day had suggested she might want to go home at least for a while. She went into her room, she closed the door, she turned out the lights, and she waited until quiet finally came. And then, it was the only thing that came to her mind, the prayer of David in Psalm 23 came to her, and she spoke the psalm, alone, afraid, uncertain, at night. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. I do not recall the full content in that memorial of Secretary J. Johnson's eulogy. I do clearly remember his necessarily taking over my downstairs office with two fully uniformed attachés carrying the famous black box who announced, "We need to be next to a telephone landline." I do also recall what Johnson said on Tuesday of this week, keeping us focused on the high ground, June 2nd, 2020. Protest, he said, as Martin Luther King taught us, is a form of language by those who believe that their voices are not heard. And the grievance here is legitimate. Protest that crosses into violence is counterproductive to the message. It undermines the message. It cedes the moral high ground, and it strengthens those on the other side of the debate. Looting undermines the larger effort here. It undermines the message. It distracts from it, and it strengthens the hand of those on the militant extremist law and order side. As the sermon last Sunday affirmed, order matters. In order that the legitimate grievance be heard, in order that the language of protest be heard. Second, the background, from high ground to background. We have covered this ground, call it the background, from this pulpit many times before, a few from several examples. We did so under the theme, A New Birth of Freedom, in reference to Jeremiah Wright, January 18, 2009. We did so under the theme, Learning Together, in reference to Ferguson and Trayvon Martin, August 24, 2014. We did so under the theme, Still Point, in reference to the Charleston Nine, June 21, 2015. We did so under the theme, Bear Witness to the Truth, in reference to Charlottesville a year earlier, November 25th, 2018. We do so today under the theme, Ground of Being, in reference to George Floyd. These are offered with encouragement that if you have the time and energy, you take the time and energy to read these or other materials to know better our background. Not everyone will find satisfaction in listening to or reading old sermons. Pity that. So you may simply want to read and read and read. Don't scan. Read. Start with James Baldwin. What a voice. Nothing, he wrote, is fixed forever and forever. It is not fixed. The earth is always shifting and the light is always changing and the sea does not cease to grind down the rock. Generations do not cease to be born. And we are responsible to them because they are the only witnesses we have. The sea rises, the light fails, lovers cling to one another, and children cling to us. The moment we cease to hold each other, the moment we break faith with each other, the sea engulfs and the light goes out. Continue then with William Faulkner. Light in August, say. Something bracing and dark from Faulkner on fire. A fellow is, he wrote, more afraid of the trouble he might have than he ever is of the trouble he's already got. He'll cling to the trouble he's used to before he'll risk a change. Yes, a man will talk about how he'd like to escape from living folks, but it's the dead folks that do him the damage. It's the dead ones that lay quiet in one place and don't try to hold him that he can't escape from. He said, remember this, your grandfather and your brother are lying there. None can escape it. And I said, not even me. And he said, not even you, least of all you. And otherwise, we remember Faulkner. The past is not dead, it's not even past. But don't stop reading until you have read Cornell professor Edward Baptist's The Half Has Never Been Told, slavery, and the making of American capitalism. We dwell in the 10th floor of a building whose first three stories were constructed with stolen land and enslaved labor, free land and free labor, for the benefit of anyone who had used or used money then or now. Now bear with me a moment as we cover the contours of our background. Read Professor Baptist on the building of the New South, 1807 to 1861, he wrote. The massive and cruel engineering required to rip 1 million people from their homes, brutally drive them to a new disease-ridden place, and make them live in terror, and as they continually built and rebuilt a commodity-generating empire. This vanished in the story of a slavery that was supposedly focused primarily not on producing profit, but on maintaining its status as a quasi-feudal elite, or producing modern ideas about race in order to maintain white unity and elite power. Read Professor Baptist on the investment incentives therein, he wrote. And because the man in the iron collar and all who followed him into the depths of the continent would make not a luxury product, but the most basic commodity in a new kind of endlessly expanding economy, there would also be no limit to the number of enslavers or to the number of investors who would want to chase enslavement's rewards. Only conscience or the inability of the world's investment markets to deploy enough savings could impede the transfer of capital to slavery's new frontiers. Read Professor Baptist on avarice. He wrote, a world greedy for a slice of the whipping machine super profits had financed the occupation of a continent and the forced migration of enslaved African Americans to the southwestern cotton fields helped to make the modern world economy possible. Slavery's expansion was the driving force in U.S. history between the framing of the Constitution and the beginning of the Civil War. It made the nation large and unified. Third, the common ground. We conclude with a Trinitarian reminder of our common ground, from high ground to background to common ground, in our Holy Gospel. Our Gospel lesson, the conclusion of St. Matthew, is an early introduction of the Trinity, the relational model of divinity so struggled after and so central to early Christianity. In that way, the Trinity is the original Christian common ground, the divine dimension of the possibility of relationship. We can use that reminder this morning in early June 2020, the possibility of relationship. We conclude with a Trinitarian reminder of common ground in our very humanity. We are all more human and more alike than we regularly affirm, all of us on this great globe. We all survived the birth canal and so have a native survivor's guilt, all 8 billion. We all need daily two things, bread and a name. One does not live by bread alone, all 8 billion. We all grow to a point of separation, a leaving home, a second identity, all 8 billion. We all love our families, love our children, love our homes, love our grandchildren, all 8 billion. We all age, and after age 50, it's maintenance, 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 all 8 billion. And we all shuffle off this mortal coil en route to that undiscovered country from whose bourne no traveler returns. All 8 billion. We conclude with a Trinitarian that is a relational reminder of common ground in our communion with one another, the communion of saints. A reminder that given our endless fallibility and our end in mortality, we need each other. In a moment, we will hear again the ancient liturgy for Eucharist. We are not together this morning to receive together the bread and cup, but we are together this morning in relationship, by memory, in hope, through prayer. And with a little imagination, with eyes closed and hearts open, we might allow the familiar ancient prayers of communion to bring us into communion. So for the next few minutes, travel with a little imagination. Imagine Eucharist at Marsh Chapel. Stand to sing, pause to reflect, step out into the aisle. Especially notice the students who were among us, who will be among us. They need you. We need one another now. Look at and look past Abraham Lincoln and Francis Willard. Receive cup and bread, bread and cup. Kneel at the altar to pray and stand in communion with the communion of saints. Imagine a congregation reciting together. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. He restoreth my soul. He leadeth me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. Thou anointest my head with oil. My cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Sursum corda, lift up your hearts. Lift and live in a relational trinity. Seek the high ground, scour the background, survey the common ground. Amen.